Last year we began Maimar Mem Dalid of Pachan Yitzchak for Pesach. Let's just go over some of the main points that we got to as an introduction last time and then get into the Gufa Maimar. Again, we start with the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Yudam and Beis, interpreting the Pasuk in Yeshayahu Navi, referring to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who recites in his tefillah, Zecharna es asher salachti lefanecha, and then he says, Vatov be'enecha sisi. And the Gemara establishes that Hatov be'enecha sisi is smichus gula tefillah. Why is smichus gula tefillah called Hatov be'enecha? What's the relationship between the two? And perhaps if we understand the Kedushas Hayom of Pesach, and what Geula is all about, what's inherent in Geula, we can shed a light elucidating the Smichus Geula Tefillah and what it has to do with the end of Chizkiyahu HaMelech's Tefillah Vatov Beinecha Sisi. We assume that within the context, the framework of Avodas Hashem, the primary mode of Avodas Hashem is A, Kiyum Ratzon Shel Hashem, that's a mitzvah saseh, and B, is to avoid violating the Ratzon Hashem through Averos. Then we have another area of human behavior which we call Reshus. And here we believe that Reshus is sort of like a secondary mode of Avodas Hashem or dimension of Avodas Hashem. So therefore, in our perception, if you imagine a building of two floors, the bottom floor is the Avodas HaMitzvos. These are explicit, and that's the bias, that's the basic structure of the house. On top of it, we have an attic, and in that attic, we have what we call the area of Divrei Reshus, and Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu. However, what we're going to see as we analyze this is that this two-floor structure is a little bit flawed. And that is that we can distinguish on a deeper level a different kind of seder, a different kind of order. You know, we don't begin with what we call the primary meaning, the mitzvos, and then go up to the Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu, the Reshus. But rather, based on what it says in the Mishnah in Avos, Kol Ma'asecha Yu L'Shem Shemayim, Kol Ma'asecha, that means every single action, we call it Divrei Reshus, has to be done L'Shem Shemayim. And we want to understand this on a deeper level. This is not just a responsibility of Kol Ma'asecha Yu B'Shem Shemayim, but rather this sort of revamps our understanding of what Divrei Reshus are all about. When we talk about an obligation that's all-encompassing for any asiyah, that it's got to be l'shem shamayim, this is really completely removing the rug under the concept of divrei reshus. If every single action has to be done l'shem shamayim, then we're talking about every single area of human behavior. We cannot possibly say, well, there's one area of human behavior that has no relevance to the Ratzon Hashem. That God, Kaviyachol, couldn't care less one way or the other in that area, in that Shetach. And then we're understanding Divrei Reshus as if they have no relationship whatsoever to Ratzon Hashem. But we would like to reinterpret this concept of Divrei Reshus. It's not, heaven forbid, that this Shetach, this area of human behavior, is completely parva and has no relation to Ratzon Hashem. What it really means is that the Ratzon Hashem in the action, which we call Divrei Reshus, for lack of a better term, that Ratzon Hashem is not immediately apparent. It's not crystal clear right after the action is done. In the case of an explicit mitzvah, you do the mitzvah, that's a fulfillment of Ratzon Hashem. Chas v'shalom, you violate an Isur, it's quite clear, immediately apparent, that you have contradicted the will of God. In a case of a Dvar Rishus, what it really means is that the relationship between the action, the behavior, and the Ratzon Hashem, the will of God, is sort of like suspended. It's not crystal clear. It's not definite. Man is endowed with a power, an ability. He has to use that ability for Tzarchei Shamayim. He has to see to it that when he implements that energy force, he is fulfilling the will of God. That's you mechol ma'asecho l'shem shamayim. What it means is that if he doesn't use that energy, that action, l'shem shamayim for the benefit of the will of God, the glory of God, then it's against the will of God. Because we are obligated to make all our ma'asim l'shem shamayim. She'ekol ma'asecho l'shem shamayim. And basically what we're doing is, if we take, you know, the, let's say you took on one pole extreme the area of Tumah, on the other pole extreme the area of Kedusha, this is bad, this is good, there's some sort of no man's territory in the middle, and all you have in the middle is, you know, what do you want to do and how do you want to do it? You're talking about a conception, or call it a perception, of what we call Shibud. Shibud means that the created being is committed. He has a commitment. And he has to serve Hashem. Okay, that's just a shibud. And there are certain areas of human behavior that are outside the parameters of the shibud. And there is no demand in those areas of man expressing or implementing that shibud, that commitment, because it's a dvar rishus. That means that, as we said before, there's this no man's neutral land, neutral zone between Tumah and Kedusha. And that's where the Gavra has perfect freedom, and he can do what he wants and how he wants. But what we're doing now is, by reinterpreting Divrei Rishus and saying that every single action has to be done L'shem Shamayim, and it is either Ratzon Hashem or it's against the Ratzon Hashem, what we're doing is, by negating the existence of that middle shetach, of that middle territory, that no man's land, we're saying there is no man's land. All of human behavior belongs to one or the other. Then what we're really declaring is, by negating that middle zone, that twilight zone, that no man's land, is we're saying that there's more than just a shibud. That the created being is not just meshubad, a shibud which is limited, and applies here, there, and elsewhere, the two polar extremes of Tumah and Kedusha, but rather he is an Eved. He's not a Meshubah Liotzro, he's an Eved Liotzro. And with regard to an Eved, the principle is Ein Kinyan Li Eved below Rabo. An Eved has nothing for himself. Everything that he possesses accrues to his master. He's Mufka, he's completely excluded from the very existence of any Rishus Liatzmo. And that's what it means to negate the existence of that shetach, of that territory that's in between Tumah and Kedusha, that expresses the middle ground, which means that he has a shibut ha'avdus. No, we're completely undermining that concept of the middle tchum. We're telling you that there is no shibut here. This is avdus, and the Eved has nothing for himself. That's what it means when we say Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu and Shehei Kol Maisav L'Shem Shamayim. There is no such thing as a Dvar Rishus in the classical sense. You can only talk about a Dvar Rishus in the sense that I need my Kavana. I have to put into it a Kavana L'Shem Shamayim in order to make sure that it is a fulfillment of Ratzon Hashem. But if I fail to do so, then it's a negation of Ratzon Hashem. There is no middle ground over here. There's no gray area in the middle. And therefore, that's what Avdus is all about. The root of Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu is the recognition that man is not Meshubah to his Creator, but he's an Eved to his Creator. The Shoresh, the root of this obligation, Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu, is not some sort of general fuzzy-wuzzy avdus. It's very, very specific. If we understand, if we can analyze the two-dimensional essential nature of avdus, then we understand what Bechol Drachecha is all about. What is an avdus? What is avdus? Number one, avdus means that the master has rights to all the produce, to all the benefits of the labor of the eved. But number two, in a more fundamental way, it means that the eved, insofar as he's an eved, has no yad, he has no possession power of his own. He has no way of making a kinyan without his master. Where is the root of b'chol drachecha adayehu? It's in the second side of avdus. It's in the fact that the eved has no kinyan for himself. Not just that his produce somehow accrues to his rebbe, to his adon, I mean, but rather the negation of anything that he has for himself. He has nothing for himself. We go back to what we said before. There is no man's land in the middle. And that's what it means that we are avadim. We are avadim means that there's no kedusha, tuma, and some freedom and rishus in the middle. No. We are mufka from having anything that we can take for ourselves. Nothing we are allowed to take for himself. We have no relationship to any sort of neutral area. Efshalem la yachasim bein adam lamakum shetia ben rishus pnuya. There's no empty area. God, in a sense, takes over everything. We are avadim. We have no kinyan for ourselves. And if that's what it means, then we can begin to understand what the Chachamim mean. The famous Mechilta, on the first of the Aseret Nedarim, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Kibaltem Malchusai Kablu Gzeiros. It means that Anochi Hashem Elokecha is the first Kabbalah, the Kabbalah of O Malchus Shamayim. Then, and only then, are we ready for the balance of the Aseret Nedarim, for the Gzeiros of Hashem. What is the essence of Kabbalah A and Kabbalah B? Kabbalah A means Kabbalah's Malchus. We are declaring ourselves as an Eved, each one of us as an Eved. And the Eved means that the Adon has a kinyan on us in such a way that excludes any possibility for the Eved to have a kinyan of his own. We're not yet ready for the second stage of Kablu Gzeirosai. We are now Avadim Knuyim L'Adon, but what is the exact substance of the mandates of the Adon? Now we have to fulfill the Adon's will. We have no will of our own. But what is exactly the will of our master? What does he want? What does he demand? What does he expect from the Eved? And that's going to be stage two. Following the Kinyan HaAdon, when the Adon acquires the Eved as an Eved, now he's Modia. He lets the Eved understand and know what is the ratzon of the other, what is his will. And that's going to be the difference between Geulas Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. In the case of Geulas Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not yet revealed the content, the specific substance of his will. But what happens as a result of Geulas Mitzrayim, or inherent in Geulas Mitzrayim, is that Bnei Yisrael become Avdei Hashem. It's only at the point of Matan Torah where they know exactly how they should serve him as an Eved. So first, in the case of the Geula, which engenders the status of Eved, we have Kabbalah number one, Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim. We have now an essential change in our very identity. We have now become Avdei Hashem. We're ready for the next stage of Kablu Gzeirosai, that second Kabbalah. How does the Eved act? Befoal, in actuality, Anochi is only a call for Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shamayim. Now we get into the call and demand for Kabbalah's Gzeiros. And therefore, if Geulas Mitzrayim represents a lot more than Shibud, it represents the emergence of our identity as a people of Avdei Hashem. We are now Avdei Hashem. And that emerges as a reality even before we know exactly what our obligation is. What avodos is the Adon imposing upon us and demanding of us? We begin to understand that even though at the moment that we entered into the Rishus of the Adam as Avadim, and we still don't know exactly, as it revealed to us, his Ratzon in specific terms, we don't have what we call the possibility of Avdus Befoal, nevertheless, that has nothing to do with the concept of Avdus. The concept of Avdus is an independent concept. And the substance of that concept is that we have nothing for ourselves. We are Avadim. We cannot act on our own. We have no reshus atzmit. We have no independent domain. There is no kinyan that we can effectuate and possess something without the Rav. All that is engendered the very moment that we enter into the Rishus HaAdon and we are Avadim, and that emerges with Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we begin to understand now what we said at the beginning, that the whole structure changes from one extreme to the other. Meaning, we had built a building of Avdus Hashem in which the foundation, the first floor, so to speak, of the building were the mitzvos and the surim, the well-defined actions. Oh, no, 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 no. What really is true is that the primary essence of Avdus is b'chol drachecha da'eyu. B'chol drachecha da'eyu means that we have nothing of our own. There is no man's land. There's no dvar rishus. B'chol drachecha, we are avadim knuyim la'adon, and therefore we have nothing of our own. That becomes the foundation stone of the entire building, the whole structure of Avodas Hashem. And immediately with our redemption from Mitzrayim, we don't know how to serve Hashem. We haven't come to our Sinai to receive the Torah. Nevertheless, we already know that there's no area of our lives, no behavior, you can't even lift up your finger, which is irrelevant to the relationship between man and God, his creator. Everything comes under the rubric of that relationship. And we are Avdei Hashem. That status, that description of our essence, even if we don't know exactly how to serve Hashem, Avo Pisha Eino no say Mokom Lavoda al Das Harav, we still don't know how to serve the Rav. The Kobokom Mafkia Esa Evid Mishus Atzmo, the Evid has nothing for himself. And therefore, even before we enter into the Gzerosa, the old mitzvos, we've already entered into the all of the Hakara, the recognition there is no Dvar Shus in this world. This is the essence of Chag HaPesach. This is the Kedushas HaYom of Chag HaGeula. With Geula we become Avdei Hashem. And now perhaps we can come back and shed a light on the concept of Smichus Geula Tefillah. Tefillah is not just the singular, unique possession of the Jewish people. We don't have exclusive rights amongst the nations of the world to tefillah. The pasuk says, "Ki beisi beis tefillah yikarei l'chol ha'amim." But there is a fundamental difference between the nation of Israel and the rest of the world as far as tefillah is concerned. We have to discern the difference in a pneumistic way below the surface, the difference between Jewish tefillah and non-Jewish tefillah. And there are many, many different differences, but we're going to call our attention on one, and that is the concept of Smichus Geula Tefillah. The Geula is something that's unique to Klal Yisrael. And therefore, Smichus Geula Tefillah, that our Tefillah is connected to and follows immediately after the Geula, that is something that is Miyached, that is unique and singular to Klal Yisrael. The Umas Olam may have Tefillah, but they don't have Smichus Geula Tefillah. They don't have Geula. They don't have the Smichus of Tefillah LeGeula. And what is the inner content of this Smichus Geula Tefillah? What is unique about Jewish prayer? The answer is that through Geula we became Avdei Hashem. And insofar as we are Avdei Hashem Memela, we are excluded from anything that we can take to ourselves. We are Mufka. There is no middle ground over here. There's no Parva neutral land. And therefore, when we come in front of our Creator as a member of the Jewish people, when I come and ask with my supplication from the Master, then even fulfilling the master fulfilling the if the master fulfills my wish, that's also for the benefit of the master. Again, kaviyochel in the case of HaKadosh Baruch, we're just using the paradigm of the relationship between an Eved and his Adon, where the Eved has nothing for himself, and everything that he has for himself belongs to his Adon, that when he comes forward in front of the Adon with any sort of supplication and any sort of request, that is Tzarchei Adon. The master himself needs that. Why is it the master's need? Because the Eved has nothing to himself. So anything he has belongs to the Adon, and anything he needs belongs to the Adon. It's for the benefit of the Adon. In the case of the nations of the world, in contrast, they don't have Geula. They weren't crowned with this status of Avdei Hashem. They have nothing more than Shibudim. They have mitzvahs here and there, but it's not an overall, all-inclusive avdus. They are not Avdei Hashem. And therefore, when they come forward with their prayers in front of the Yotzer, then, unless they're asking for something that would help them fulfill the Shibud, if they're asking for something that would help them fill Dvar Rishus, then they don't have Smichus Geula Tefillah. They don't have a tefillah which is predicated on Geula. They don't have a tefillah that's predicated on Avdei Hashem. They don't have a tefillah which they can say with all, it's an all-inclusive prayer that is part of my Avdus Hashem, that's for the benefit of the Adon. When we come in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam as the Jewish nation, with Smichus Geula tefillah, our tefillah, we're asking Hashem, please respond, because that tefillah, even if it's for a Dvar Rishus, is part and parcel of the framework of fulfilling our role as Avodim. Forget about Shibudim. We have now Avdus. And the Avdus means that essentially anything that we have, every Koach HaChaim, is really yours, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Shetach that we described, which is a no man's land, simply doesn't exist. And anything that comes under the Bakosh in that no man's land, and would seem at the surface be Divrei Rishus, that's not what it is. The Bakosha is not for Tzarchei Atzmo. The Bakosha is for the ability to function full capacity as an Eved who has nothing for himself, and it all belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the essential difference between Geula as an introduction to Tefillah and the Tefillah Shel Yisrael and the Tefillah of the Umas HaOlam. This is the deeper meaning of Smichus Geula Tefillah. Again, just to reiterate and bring home the point that as far as the Umas HaOlam is concerned, their definition, their status is Shibud. And Shibud means that there are certain demands here and there, and they are committed to fulfill those demands. But there's a whole area called Dvar Rishus. And their tefillah, and so far as it relates to that area called Dvar Rishus, doesn't have that extra quality that makes it fundamentally unique. And that is the tefillah of Klal Yisrael, the tefillah of Klal Yisrael, reflecting their very essence as Avdei Hashem, make their tefillah such that their bakasha from the Yotzer is not a bakasha to fulfill their own needs, because they don't have their own needs. There is no middle ground that part of a territory of no man's land. Everything belongs to Hashem. That's what Smichus Geula Tefillah is. The power of that tefillah is because of Geula. The power of that tefillah is because we, through Geula, became Avdei Hashem. An Eved who's mufka from any kinyan for himself. Now that tefillah is so much more powerful, so much more meaningful. And we could come full swing back to our original question about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who is asking that Hashem receive his tefillah, and why? Shatov Beinecha Asisi. What does it mean, Shatov Beinecha Asisi? It means that whatever I'm asking for you, whatever I'm asking from you, God, is because it's Tov Beinecha, because it's for the express purpose of being an Eved Hashem in the fullest sense, of taking every single area, B'chol Ma'asech L'Shem Shamayim. This is Smichus Geula Tefillah, because Smichus Geula Tefillah reveals that it's the Tovas HaMakom Kaviyachol, it's for the benefit of the Master, That's inherent in every tefillah of Klal Yisrael. Hatov beinecha sisi shesomach geula letefillah. Maimer Mem Hei is a short of Maimer, and we'll learn it. It's a bit, in my opinion, a bit ambiguous. Maybe we'll see if together we can manage to clarify it and sharpen it up a little bit. It's all based on a pasuk in Shmos that introduces the Makkah of Dever. Vayosem Hashem moed lemor machar yasa Hashem ha-dever hazeh be'aretz. That with regard to this particular Makkah, Makkah's Dever, we have the word moed. And the Pakad Yitzchak wants to understand what's unique about Dever. Only in this Makkah do we have the word moed. We don't find it in any of the other moadim. So when Moshe tells Paro that you should know there's a specific time that's been designated for Makkas Dever, he tells him the Lashon Moed. The other Makkas, he tells them tomorrow there's going to be a Makkah, but he doesn't mention the word Moed. So in order to understand this, we're going to take a look at a statement of Chachamim, and the Chachamim say that every one of the Eser Makos has a direct relationship to the various layers of creation. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world the Asara Mamoros. And those Asara Mamoros relate to or express different levels of the Seder in the Bria. And this is described in great detail by the Maral Miprag in Gvuras Hashem, Perek Nun Zayin. And he shows you that each one of the Eser Makkos corresponds to one of the other Eser Mamoros, to one specific aspect of creation. And the Makkah, in a sense, is meant to undermine that dimension of creation. It's a thesis and antithesis. The thesis is the Eser Mamoros, the antithesis is the Eser Makkos. Says the Maral that if you want to know which of the Eser Makkos Dever corresponds to, according to the Seder HaMakkos and the Seder of the Eser HaDibros, you will pinpoint the Pasuk Yehi Ma'oros in Bereishis Aleph Pasuk Yudalid Berkiya Shomayim Lemoadim Ulizmanim. Interesting. The purpose of the Maimar Yehi Ma'oros is the creation of time, but not just time, but the moadim, the specific unique times of day and night and the month and so forth and so on. Now the word Yehi Ma'oros is written in the Torah without a vav chaser, and the Chachamim say that why is the word Ma'oros chaser? And this is Yerushalmi in the fourth parak of Tainis. Ma'aras chaser ksiv miloshen ma'ara, meaning ma'ara is a curse. Kisha ma'oros lokin askar aboliolam. That sometimes there is a likui in the luminaries, and this likui is called an eclipse, and it forebodes some sort of danger and evil in the world. And in the light of that Chazal, the Maimar of Ma'oros, which again parallels to the Makkah of Dever, is written, the Maimar of Ma'oros is formulated in terms of Moadim. You know, so therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu wants to foretell that exact time of Dever, he uses the language of Moed, because this is the parallel to the Maimar of Ma'oros. And the Pachad Yitzchak completes this very short Maimar with the word Vahavein, indicating that there's a deeper level here. I mean, I'm just going to take a little bit of a shot at it. I think what he means to say is that the word Moed in the Pasuk V'yosem Hashem Moed Lema Mochar, etc., in regard to Dever, is a code word. And that word Moed you can sort of plug in Ma'oros. And the word Ma'oros is written without a vav in the Torah, as the mimer of Yehi Ma'oros. And read without the vav, it's Ma'eros, meaning it's a klal, it's a curse of a sort. It means that the Ma'or is not complete, which forebodes evil. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is communicating to Paro, that tomorrow, at this Moed, you're going to have Ma'oros, but Ma'oros without the Vav. And that's foreboding evil, a curse upon the world, and that's going to be the curse of Dever. And maybe on a deeper meaning, what he's trying to say here, he doesn't spell it out, is that the entire process of destroying nature in the Esar Makos, of undermining each of the Esar Makos, of the Asar Mamoros, means that, you know what, you the Mitzrim have really destroyed nature. And Mida Keneged Mida, your punishment is going to, the nature will be undermined. And the 10 facets of nature are the Asar Mamoros. And what parallels them is the Mida Keneged Mida to undermine the 10 Mamoros that represent the 10 elements of nature in a certain sequence, in a certain order. You have wreaked havoc in the world, Mitzrayim. Don't think that you just subjugated a people and that's it. You are really undermining the whole purpose of the Bria, of the Aseres HaMamoros. You are the antithesis to creation by subjugating this nation, because they represent the purpose of creation. Let's go on to Maimer Mem Vav. And here I think the Pachad Yitzchok spells it out a little bit more. And we don't have to do so much detective work. And we begin Maimer Mem Vav with the liturgy of Dayenu. And we love to sing Dayenu and swing Dayenu and the whole bit. And basically, Dayenu is made up of a long chain of Shevach Vodoya, of praises of Hashem. And at each level, we go from one level to the other, we praise Hashem with the word Dayenu. We don't find, with regard to any of the other miracles, you know, Hanukkah, Purim, etc., where we have to publicize the miracle and thank Hashem, we don't find this pirut, this very specific, you know, list where that we count off the milos one by one from one madriga to the other. That's the opening question, and hopefully we'll swing back and shed light at that at the end of the mimer. We begin, shall we say, the body of this mimer with a pasuk in Shmos Vav at the beginning of the second parasha of Sefer Shmos Va'era, El Avram, El Yitzhak, El Yaakov, Bekel Shakai. And the obvious question that the rational mind begs to understand is the name Shin, Dalid, and then a Yud, Shakai. Why is it that in this process of Geula, and at this particular juncture when Moshe Rabbeinu is told that there's a divine promise that Hashem will redeem the people of Israel, the name, the identity of Hashem is Shin, Dalet, and Yud. And in order to begin to understand this, we really have to take out a different volume of the series of Pachad Yitzchak, in this case for Shavuos. And here in the volume on Pesach, he copies and pastes a little piece of that mimer for Shavuos. Excuse me. And we're going to read this again. This seems to be a synopsis of a longer mimer on Shavuos, which we don't have access to. And the Chachomim speak about Halal HaGadol. Now in Halal HaGadol, we have the phrase Kili Olam Chasdo. After every single expression of praise, there are 26 different expressions, and the phrase Kili Olam Chasdo repeats itself 26 times. And according to Chazal, the number 26 here is very crucial. The Gemara Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Ches establishes that the 26 Kili Olam Chasdos are all, they parallel the 26 generations from the time of creation until Matan Torah. And the Gemara adds the three-word phrase that's critical, Vizan Osam Bechesed. It sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Chesed expressed itself in the 26 generations prior to and up to Matan Torah, from the time of creation, as if to say that there was no chesed or a lot less chesed after Matan Torah. And that is something that's unacceptable. You cannot tell us that before Matan Torah the world is sustained by pure chesed, and afterwards, from Matan Torah on, there is no chesed, or it's a limited chesed. Chalila v'chas to say such a thing. But what it means is that the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu before Matan Torah is one kind of chesed. After Matan Torah becomes a different type of chesed. And as we go through this maimer, we're going to appreciate that the chesed post-Matan Torah, paradoxically, exceeds way beyond the chesed of pre-Matan Torah, the 26 generations of Kiryas Olam Chasdo. The phrase that the Pachad Yitzchak coins here for the chesed of the first 26 generations is chesed shel vitur. Vitur means that, you know what, you don't deserve it, I'll give it to you anyway. It's pure grace, it's a pure gift. And here the Pachad Yitzchak offers a mashal. There are two ways in which Reuven could support Shimon and get Shimon back on his feet. One way is to offer Shimon all of Shimon's needs on a daily basis. He has expenses, he has to pay bills. Reuven will cover those bills. The other way of Reuven supporting Shimon is to set up some sort of a business in which Shimon could run the business and earn his profits on his own. Now, on one level, perhaps a more superficial level, the first way of doing it is the greater chesed, because you've covered all the needs, the financial expenses, and the upkeep, and the, you know, the michya, whatever Shimon actually needs. In the second case, in the second method, so to speak, Shimon receives what he earns on his own. Reuven is like less in the picture, in a sense, taking a back seat. And perhaps from Reuven's perspective, the active element here, Reuven is, in the second case, not giving the total chesed. But below the surface, on a deeper level, when Reuven gives Shimon the opportunity to bring in his own funds, that's a deepening of the chesed. It's a much more profound chesed. Let's go back to the Nimshal now. The chesed of the first 26 generations before Matan Torah is the chesed of the first category of purely of pure gifts, as we said before. Lo hayelo kaviyachol asokim hanos nivokom. God is not offering these 26 generations an asek. He's not building them a business where they can bring in their own profits and really give kiyum to the world. You know, really justify the existence of the world. The chesed, therefore, the first 26 generations is chesed vitur. Vitur means HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives of his own. But from Matan Torah and on, the chesed is much more profound, immeasurably more profound. It becomes a different kind of chesed entirely, in which the world, the universe, really builds up and benefits and what's the word I'm looking for? Laharviach means to earn with my own hands, to earn the kiyum, the existence of the world. The world is now justified in its existence because of its own work. It's almost like if you rent me out an apartment and I pay you rent. Here too, in the Nimshal, in the case of post-Matan Torah, What happens is the universe now is no longer dependent upon chesed shel vitur, but rather a chesed shel mishpat. Mishpat means that the chesed expressed itself in a totally different way. The chesed now affords man with the possibility of earning his keep through mishpat within the strict laws of justice. So that Matan Torah is not a cutting down of chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather a deepening of that chesed. The chesed of Vitor for the first 26 generations, every dar has its own Vitor. And therefore, Kili Olam Chasdo repeats itself 26 times. Every generation is granted whatever is granted by Hashem, purely gratis. But from Matan Torah and Eilech, and onwards, the chesed is chesed mishpat, and that mishpat sets up rules that really flow throughout all the generations. There's no difference between one generation and the other. All are bound and governed by the same set of rules. They are all in the same asek together. The chesed is great because now they can earn and justify their keep, their existence, the kiyum ha'olam. Good. Now we get back to our discussion. At what point is there a shift between chesed of vitur and chesed of mishpat? Where is the moment? When is the moment of transformation, of transition? And the answer is that this is a process that has a beginning and an end. It's not all pinpointed in 1 second in time. Surely the end of this process, when Chesed Mishpat emerges in its complete form, that's at the moment of Matan Torah. But there's a beginning of Chesed Shel Mishpat, and that is the moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim is already the beginning of a transition from Chesed Vitur to Chesed Mishpat, and we can define two different dimensions of that transition. Number one, the Hakdama, and number two, the Gufa D'Yuvta. What does this mean? On the one hand, as a Hakdama, the beginning of the transition means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? There's no longer chesed gratis to those who don't deserve it. The Mitzrim in this case have forfeited their rights for chesed shel vitur. That's the introduction to this transition from Vitur to Mishpat. And the second dimension is that now God has formed a recipient, he calls it a partzuf, I think he means the image of a recipient who, through his own kochos, will be able to deserve chesed, receiving goodness and existence from Hashem, b'din u'b'mishpat. The first expression of this transition, which we call the Hakdama, in which Hashem closes the faucets of Chesed Shel Vitur, is the Eser Makos of Mitzrayim. The 10 Makos is where Hashem is beginning to close the faucet of the Shefa, of all the wonderful gifts that are built into creation, that reflect the Chesed of Vitur of the 26 generations before Matan Torah. So that's the first dimension of this transition from Vitur to Chesed, that's the Makos. The second dimension, and the ultimate transition to pure Mishpat, that is Har Sinai. So from the Eser Makos until Har Sinai, we have a process of transition from Vitur to Mishpat. Maivet Har Sinai, in that sense, is the completion of this transition. Geulas Mitzrayim is the kickoff, the beginning of this transition. And now we begin to understand the name Shakai at the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Chazal tell us that the deeper meaning of that name of Hashem, Shin Dalet Yud, is, and this is the Gemara in Chagiga Yud Beis, this is the midah which HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omar Li Olam Dai. Stop. There's a termination here. And we get back to our understanding of the transformation and the transition from Vitor to Mishpat. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that this Midah of Chesed, which until now was just endless, was boundless, Hashem was just pouring Chesed out for those who didn't deserve it at all. Now Hashem says we want to get into a deeper, more profound type of Chesed where we give you a chance to earn your keep. Chachamim will tell us that Omar Liolomo die means HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that, look, until I say the word die, all Ashpa that comes as Chesed of Chesed Shel Vitur, it has no bounds, it has no limitations, no shiur. Now as we enter in through the transition to the Chesed of Mishpat, now things will have an evaluation. It's going to be bounded. It's a Dover Katsuf. And limiting Chesed is in truth a way of deepening Chesed, because Omar Liolomo Dai means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu now says that, you know what, there's something more profound here about Chesed. And here the Pachad Yitzchak uses a statement which is very, very poetic. Ora Shal Kedusha Zu, he who ha'or ha'ganuz b'shem shin dalad yud, shepir shukhacham li'omar li'omo dai, ha'inu she'geulak mitzrayim huftachal avoseinu b'shem shin dalad yud b'nei sh'ashem hazeh meir hu es ha'tmura. Tmura means the transition, mi'chesed vito l'chesed mishpat, geula, geulas mitzrayim omedesi b'sod ha'tmura hazu. So the geul of Mitzrayim is the Shin Dalad Yud Omar Liolomo Dai. It represents the transition. There was a light coming from Shamayim, but that light is now, in a sense, overtaken by the Shem Shin Dalad Yud. That's going to allow a hamaka, a much deeper kind of chesed, a profound chesed. That's the beginning of the process of transition to Chesed Shel Mishpat, which will reach its culmination at Maimad Har Sinai. Now, there is a possibility of misunderstanding and saying that, well, if Hashem is bounding, is circumscribed, is limiting his chesed, even if it's coming for the purpose of deepening the chesed, but nevertheless it's some sort of a hafkav chesed, and in some sense, you know, the original chesed, which was boundless, is completely lost from now on, and now it becomes a bounded chesed, and there will always be within the new chesed, the Roman numeral number 2, the post-Matan Torah chesed, a midah and a shir, meaning it will always be limited. And here, the Navi comes Lafuke to take us out of this misunderstanding. And this is the Navi of Malachi at the end of the Tanakh. Varikosi lachem bracha ad beli dai, boundless. This is the post-Matan Torah, mind you, Chesed Shel Mishpat, and yet it's boundless ad beli dai. And the deeper meaning of this is that within the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's of choice, his Bechira of Klal Yisrael, he offers them a bracha that makes the Pe'ula of Chesed, even though it's a Chesed Shel Mishpat, not some sort of a limited kind of situation of Chesed, but rather it's unlimited. It's a bracha within the chesed that is specifically bestowed upon Klal Yisrael. And it's a chidush of ad beli dai, that within this relationship in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, the people of Israel, the ability to work and to earn our existence and our chesed, there's a bracha within that. And that bracha goes up a level, to another level, to a higher level, climbing and climbing, that tzaddikim go b'chayil el chayil, until it gets to the point where it breaks out of any sort of limitation, of any agbola, of any bounds, and there are no longer bounds on this kabbalas ha-chesed, in the essential hashpah of chesed. Now, in its very kishkis, it becomes a deeper chesed of harikosi lachem brachat b'lidai. Chazal interpretes ad sheyivlu sifsosechem milomar dai. That's a Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Beis. It means that the hanhaga of shin dalid yud sha'omer l'lamudai does not matbiat chunas hagvul b'mahusa shalosh pasuk. It doesn't set an absolute limitation and bounds on the essence of the Hashpa of Chesed from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even though Hashem declared, Amar Liolam Odai, nevertheless there's a bracha that's given to Klal Yisrael, and the very essence of that bracha is Ad B'lidai. And now we go back to the beginning that we started with Dayenu, that in the midst of Sipur Yitzis Mitzrayim, when we describe all the great milos of Yitzis Mitzrayim, we say Dayenu. What is the significance of the word Dayenu? We never found it in any liturgy of any other holiday. It means Dayenu is a kiyum of the Adshi Yivlusif Sosecha Milomer Dai, that it's endless. The chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Klal Yisrael is endless. Let's not think that Sha'omar Lo'olamo Dai, that in the context of Yitzis Mitzrayim, that Gulas Mitzrayim is initiated by and expressed by the Anhag of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of Omar Lo'olamo Dai, which was promised to the Avos, as that Anhaga, Dafka, when we sing the praises of Gulas Mitzrayim, we have to use this style of Dayenu. Dayenu means Novlos, Hein Hasvasayim. We cannot express that the power of speech is not grand enough and not great enough to express all the gratitude for Hashem, because the bracha is endless. And that's why, with regard to Sipur Yitzrayim, we recite the Dayenu. V'arkosi lachem bracha ad b'lidai, ad sheyivlu sifsosechem milomar dai. In the very few minutes that we have remaining, I'd like to introduce Maimer Mem Zayin, and B'li Neder will pick this up next time. There's a halach in Sipur Yitzrayim of Derech Shelo Tshuva, and if a person has no one at the Seder to ask him any questions, he should ask himself the questions. And we've studied this in the past. What is the significance of Shoel Es Atzmo? We spoke about the fact that Shoel is from a negation, from a certain darkness. It's Maskel Begnus U'Mesayim V'Shvach. But in this Maimer Mem Zayin, we have something to add here. And it's all based on the fact that there is a parallel between the Asaras Mamoras Shenivru Ben HaOlam, as the Mishnah says at the end of Avos, and the Asaras HaDibros at Matan Torah. It's not coincidental that they both number 10. And when we speak about these two concepts, it's almost as if they are synonymous. There's something very similar about them. The fundamental difference between them is that with regard to the first group of Asar Mamaros, we're talking about Brias HaOlam. With regard to the second, we're talking about Matan Torah. We want to understand the parallel corresponding relationship, the similarity, and yet the contrast, the difference between the two. And it's all based on the fact that, as we established in the previous Maimar, Yetzias Mitzrayim is the beginning, it's the kickoff of the transition in Chesed from the Chesed of Vitur to the Chesed of Mishpat. Then Yetzias Mitzrayim is the beginning of the Chesed Shel Mishpat, which emerges in its full glory at the point of Matan Torah, when the 26 generations that were sustained by the power of the Kili Olam Chazdos, the Chesed, the absolute Chesed, which is total gratis, which is Vitur, even for those who aren't deserved. When that process of the 26 Doros of Kili Olam Chazdos comes to its fruition, after its completion, we are now ready for Chesed on a deeper level, the Chesed of Mishpat, which is going to begin, as we said, with Gulas Mitzrayim, but culminate with Har Sinai, with Kabbalah Satorah. So B'li Neder will pick this up next time. We'll try to get a deeper understanding and insight into the Chesed and the difference between Chesed Shel Vitur and the Chesed of Mishpat. and ultimately the relationship between the Asar Ma'amar Shenivra Ben Olam and the Aseres HaDibros Shenitnu Bahem HaTorah. Thank you very much.